Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome in to Behind Enemy Lines, a collaboration between the Paul Farrington Show and the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Paul, joined by Robert Ziggy Ziegler up at Harvard University, and Andy Herman, recovering from the Monday Night Football game between the Packers and Eagles last night. Andy logged on today, and Ziggy, without even saying hello first, just says, "You guys lose to the Giants, this show might be over." And Andy's like, "Yeah, might be over already." So, Andy, how are you doing? The hangover, the morning after.
Splendid. I am swell, splendid, spectacular, all of the above, except the exact opposite for the most part. Very frustrating Monday Night Football game. I realized, too, this is the first time. We had week four where you guys lost and the Packers tied. This is the first time we've done this where both teams are on the losing end of things. So I guess misery loves company. We get to spend some time in each other's company and wallow in the fact that Detroit and Chicago are 1-2 in the division. And we are, you know, buddies at the bottom of the NFC North. So yay us.
How does it happen? How does it happen so quickly, guys? Like a second ago, we're beating the Lions and we're feeling great. You know, go back a couple seconds before that and you guys have that fourth quarter in Pittsburgh. And I mean, it turns quickly. It turns quickly in football. And at least, yeah, we could have this sort of, I guess it'll turn into probably a therapy session for us. That's how our instant reactions normally go to Viking games, Andy. So if we can help you in any way, we're going to do the best that we can during this episode.
I appreciate it. How are you guys doing? How are you guys doing?
Doing great. This is kind of normal for us. Ziggy was all over.
It feels nearly as bad for us as it does you guys.
Ziggy was all over your comment section last night, Andy. We were both tuned in late night watching you.
The weight of expectations certainly is a real thing. You know, when you have very high expectations and you don't meet it, that's always a little bit worse. Also, you guys got the ability to go, you know, you had to see your team lose, but then you get to hate watch on Monday Night Football and you got a very enjoyable hate watch. Like we, you know, the Packers didn't even get that. So at least you guys got something out of it.
But I'm not sure I would call that game an enjoyable hate watch. That was just a tough game to watch in general.
That might be true. That's like chewing a very rough, you know, cut of meat that you spent way too much money for. And you're just chewing. You're like, this is nowhere near as good as I was expecting.
Because it's not like Paul and I are sitting back thinking, boy, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to win this game. That's awesome news for us. We love to see Philadelphia be on top. I want to see more runs on 3rd and 12 from the Philadelphia Eagles offense in the red zone. Like there is no winning in this.
Yeah,
there was some really dumb stuff by Philly. Like it doesn't matter in the scheme of things, and certainly not where we even probably want to go with this from a Packers standpoint. But they did some really stupid things in that game, and just the Green Bay Packers completely just let them get away with it.
The fourth down decision was one of the dumbest thing, probably the dumbest thing I've seen this year since Ben Johnson kicked it off to the Vikings on Monday Night Football and basically lost the game when we ran the clock out. I could not believe that they went for that.
It was remarkable. There's like, even as they're lining up, like I'm just like starting, I'm like writing down my notes and stuff and trying to like get things together in the press box and never really expected that. And all of a sudden it's like the ball's in the air. I'm like, what? I'm sorry, what? I'm like, what? They're throwing deep to AJ Brown. And yeah, I mean, I think it was Carrington Ballantyne on the coverage. Kudos to him for having good coverage on the play. But I was beyond stunned. And I honestly thought like at that point, I'm like, oh, they're going to get in field goal range. I thought they'd miss the kick because that's what they've done all season long. But I'm like, they're going to get in field goal range. And, you know, they kind of did, but not really.
Yeah. I had the same exact reaction as you did. I actually was changing our thumbnail to entitled to the live we were doing after the game. And I walked out and the ball was actually in the air. And I had to like, you know, run back and get everyone I was watching the game with. I was like, Dad, you might want to come back downstairs here. Like we're watching the game together and the Packers have a shot. So Andy, you know, the defense had, I called it a borderline heroic effort last night in holding Philly and all that star power to 10 points. But the offense, you know, the offense just couldn't get the job done again. And I said, if you just gave the Packers 20 points every game this season, they'd actually be 6-3. Like they'd have a better record than they do right now, which is shocking, right? Just 20 points. I'm just going to ask you flat out, Like, is the Packers offense broken?
Yeah, no, it's very broken. What's most concerning is that teams have been doing the same thing against Green Bay. And certainly it was a very similar copy and paste approach to what Carolina did a week ago to what Philly did. Now, Philly runs this style of defense anyway, so even more so, you knew basically what you were getting into in this game, and Green Bay had no answers for it. And it's really interesting in a variety of different ways because, well, first of all, there's nothing that you feel good about at the moment, meaning you don't feel great about the run game. You don't feel great about the passing attack. You can't really go deep because they're playing too high. You know, you've tried some of the quick passing game. You've tried the outside, you know, end arounds, jet sweeps and screens to the outside. That hasn't really worked. Your line's not protecting long enough to get some of like the deep digs and things like that. We've seen a couple of them, but now with consistency. And the big thing is your offensive line is playing poorly. But when you know what the other team's basically going to do and you can't do anything about it, that's a huge concern. And then again, going back to the offensive line, you run the ball, Josh Jacobs, over 20 times in this game. And along with Emmanuel Wilson, who got one carry, you averaged fewer than 3.5 yards per carry. Can't get the run game going at all. And then, you know, Jordan Love's pressured per Next Gen Stats on over 40% of his dropbacks. That's not great. And then, you know, even above and beyond that, we talk about it all the time. I'm like, well, Christian Watson's coming back. And once Christian Watson's coming back, those safeties are going to play deep and you're going to get too high safety looks and you're going to be able to run the football. And we also saw, like, you know, Matt LaFleur runs a lot of the jet sweeps and reverses and things like that to keep teams also, you know, spread out wide. Teams are lining up spread out wide with two high safeties. They're as spread out as you can be. They're saying, here's a red carpet. Would you like to run the football with Josh Jacobs? And over are saying, yes, yes, we would. We would love to run the football with Josh Jacobs. And they just can't do it. You're getting the most advantageous looks that you can imagine. And Green Bay is still, they're feeding them and feeding them and feeding them. They just cannot do, they can't run it at all. And when you can't run it and they're giving you that style of defense, it makes things really hard. And you just look at the play sheet and there's just nothing you can go to. And that's what we've seen these last 2 weeks with both Carolina and Philly. And to make things compounded even worse, you're at home. You're not even fighting in a way crowd or crowd noise or adversity or anything like that. You're literally at home.
Yeah. And I'm just looking here. I don't think anything exemplifies it better, maybe, than the first drive of the game where, you know, I saw in LaFleur's press conference, he says, yeah, we were trying to establish the run. I was like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Yeah, it's like you go through 5 yard run, 3 yard run, 4 yard run, 2 yard run, 2 yard run, 1 yard run. It's like, yeah, they can't get anything going. Somehow, you know, they find themselves on the Philly 38 and Jordan takes that massive sack to put them, you know, out of field goal range. If you want to say they were in field goal range at that point there. I know it was a cold, like, windy night, but yeah, I mean, it sounds like I haven't looked too much into the, you know, the too high safety problem that they have, but I keep seeing people bring it up, and you know, if you can't run the ball, it's going to be hard to, and now, well, Jenkins is hurt.
It's hard for me to see how it's going to get better either. Elgton Jenkins, it looks like he's going to be out for a long time. Heading into, not to look forward to next year when you've got a season ahead, but Rashid Walker, Sean Ryan, Kennard are all hitting the open market. I don't know what Green Bay's plan is going to be to address this, but I don't think the problem is Josh Jacobs. I don't think the problem is that he has forgotten how to play football. The problem is that the offensive line, it's not like they're elite pass blockers either, but the run blocking is just not working. And I don't know enough to say how they're supposed to go in and fix that. If they need different coaching, if they need new personnel, if they have to do what the Rams did and just change how they run the football, that's what McVay did when the run stopped working in 2022. But something big has to change very, very quickly.
Yeah, and to your point, they're going to have some major questions on the offensive line. Not only that, but Elgton Jenkins has got like basically a $20 million team option as well, which they're almost assuredly going to decline. So he's probably gone as well. They're going to have a ton of questions there. I mean, and it's just not even next year. They have a ton of questions right now. They've got to get this figured out. And now, again, Elgton Jenkins probably out for a significant period of time. They just put him on injury reserve, so he's not going to be back anytime soon. And, you know, they spent a ton of money on Aaron Banks, a first-round pick on Jordan Morgan last year, a second-round pick on Anthony Belton this year. And then even like last year, some of their late-round picks where they usually hit on offensive linemen, Travis Glover's out for the year on IR. Jacob Monk has given them nothing. John Williams, a seventh-round pick this year, is seemingly out for the year. Is not even, didn't even go to rookie minicamp, has not done anything with the team as of yet. This is not looking great at the moment.
Yeah, I heard you. Was that you who asked the question about the offensive line, Andy?
Yeah.
At the press. Okay. Yeah, I was listening through. I was like, wait a second. I recognize that voice. And then what LaFleur said, he doesn't want to pin it on the guys that they need to be better.
Yeah, probably could have maybe asked that question a little bit better, because I didn't really give him an out to answer it other than throwing his guys under the bus, which of course he's probably not going to do in that situation. But, you know, I think the overarching thing for me is that this really does feel like it comes down to the offensive line. You know, if you look at any of Jordan's metrics, when either pressured or not pressured, it's night and day. Like, he's Superman when he's not pressured. And if he's pressured right now, it's a nightmare. And so, you know, you've got to protect him better. And then, you know, again, Josh Jacobs, like you said, he hasn't forgot how to play football. If you give him any little crease, he's going to find it. And they're just not giving him anything to work with. And when you've got the high, you know, one of the highest paid quarterbacks and, you know, one of the best running backs in football, and neither of them can do anything because of your offensive line play up front, that's just a major issue. And like we talked about, just that play sheet gets very barren very quick when you can't protect, you can't run block. What do you want to call?
Well, you're right. When I'm watching Love and he has time, you're totally right. He's Superman. He picks people apart. I always felt like when he gets pressured, you can almost see him get a little antsy. That's when you see some of those, you know, off the back foot throws. And, yep. You know, it took the big sack that I alluded to earlier. And, you know, those are the situational plays that you look at with the Green Bay and you go like, all right, can't take that sack, can't move out field goal range. You know, Bo Melton has the big drop. Love the fumble at the end of the first half when it looks like you're going to get the lead. Like, there's just, on top of a failure to execute, you know, the common plays in the big moments as well, it seems all year, Green Bay's kind of been, you know, struggling to win those critical play areas. And I thought one of the biggest ones, you said, it's, you know, when you know what the other team's going to do and you still can't do anything about the Packers, like, that's a problem. Well, the Eagles knew what the Packers were going to do, and they did something about it on, you know, the 4th-and-1 play, where, you know, you have TikTokers after the game who are like immediately saying like, hey, look, even I knew the Packers were going to do that here. And that to me was just, you know, that's on LaFleur. That's on LaFleur to, like, that can't be the play call in that situation with the one seed sort of on the line. Like, you know, I don't know if it'll ultimately wind up costing them, but it very well might. And that's what you're doing. We're all sitting back here watching the game going like, what was the reaction like in the press box when that was the play?
Well, press box is obviously, you know,
a little more professional
or anything like that. yeah. So for more,
but guys are thinking things.
Yes, very much so. Like, you know, you could still tell there was like, I don't, whether it's a press box or anything else, everyone in that stadium knew exactly what was coming. It wasn't just the defensive tackle, Jomo, pointing it out and saying inside zone, inside zone. Everyone knew exactly. I'm sure everyone on TV watching as well knew they're handing to Josh Jacobs on this play. It was the most obvious thing in the world. And yet the Packers were the only ones that thought they were getting, well, we're in shotgun. It's fourth down. We're clearly going to pass the ball. It's like, everyone knows you're going to run. Everybody knows you're going to run in that situation. And not only like just run the most bland, you know, whatever, not even anything off it, not even like Jordan Love pretending that he's going to keep it on a read option so that maybe the defender has to stay with him. Just literally, you know, an offensive line that can't run block with the game on the line. Hey, you know, and Philly with some unbelievable defensive tackles who just also happens to be calling out the play you're about to run at the line of scrimmage. Get out of here.
It's, I'm sorry, so for stupid. Laughing at the crash out,
no,
but
you have to. You have to. Like, it's so stupid. You have, the only thing you left to do is laugh, because how does like somebody, I don't care. Like, I don't care if it's the center or like the, like, if I'm the center, all right. And I, like, this is obviously going very, everything's on Matt here. This isn't on any of the players. He called the play, et cetera. But like, if I'm Sean Ryan and they're calling out the play ahead of time, I don't care how many times Jordan asks for that ball, I'm not snapping that damn ball. We're going to 4th-and-6 if need to. We'll take the delay of game. I'm not snapping that ball. And if I'm Jordan and I hear inside zone, inside zone, inside zone, they're going over here, and I see that, I'm sorry, I'm not calling for that snap. We're either calling a timeout or I'm audibling or I'm going rogue or I'm getting under center and I'm just going to call a QB sneak on my own. I don't care. But like, man, at some point, if the other, like, there has to be, there has to be a, you know, a button that you can push.
Yeah, an alert button. Yeah, something like that.
An alert that you can call. That if the other team knows the play, abort. You just literally abort. I don't care what you do. Just don't run the play. That seems like a bad idea.
But yeah. This is the problem is at Philly, when it's like 4th and inches, everybody knows what they're going to run. The reason that's not a problem is because the thing they're running is something they're really, really good at.
Right.
The Green Bay Packers this year have not been good on inside zone. So the thought that with, again, like Paul, I'm not going to say the season is on the line, but a really important game is on the line.
Big time.
And you say something we've struggled with this game that hasn't worked, that hasn't really gone Super Bowl the first few times we've done it. We're going to roll it out again. You've got to be better prepared than that. And this is why I've been a big Matt LaFleur defender. I have said for a long time that Packers fans that want him gone don't know what they have. They haven't gone through it like the Vikings have. He's a good coach. He wins a bunch of games. But the Jordan Love, Matt LaFleur offensive partnership is just not working. And one of those guys is a person you can replace, and one of them isn't. So at this point, I'm starting to wonder if at the end of the season, barring some miraculous offensive turnaround like the Rams had of McVay a few years ago, if LaFleur is going to be back next year.
It's going to be interesting to see. You know, obviously, there's a lot of ways this could go. They can turn it around and be great and be amazing the rest of the year. That'd be nice, at least from a Packer side of things. Things could falter very quickly, and things could get way worse before they get better. And I still struggle to see an avenue where something could happen in season, but if you go on a major losing streak and you lose the locker room, it's probably not out of the realm of possibility where maybe you want to see what Jeff Hafley can do. I'll say Jeff Hafley can do as a head coach. You know, there's definitely some opportunity there if things go really, really wrong. And then other situations are maybe, you know, it goes okay. Maybe you get in the playoffs, maybe you lose in the first round. You're not willing to can Matt, but the offense still looks stagnant. And so, you know, the force is, hey, you're going to still be the coach. You're no longer going to call the plays, and you need to bring in a new offensive mind. Maybe that's a Mike McDaniel. Maybe that's a Brian Daboll. Maybe that's a somebody like that that you're bringing in that's going to have to revitalize the offense. But usually when that stuff sort of happens, it's kind of the beginning of the end.
Well, it's hard for me to see, given the Packers have had consistent problems being prepared and with penalties, to say, well, LaFleur is such a good coach that we're willing to keep him around if we don't trust him to run the offense.
I feel like the worst spot Green Bay could be in is having just a repeat of how last season's playoff game went, where it ends and you're just kind of left with this, like, you know, bland taste in your mouth. Like, you're like, what was that? Because if it goes off the rails, at least you're getting a change in. But if it goes the other way, Toyotathon starts in a couple days here, it looks like. So if it goes the other way, great for you guys. But if you just kind of like limp your way into the playoffs, don't really compete in the wild card round, and say, okay, should we get rid of LaFleur? Do we want to do that? I just think that's a bad mojo going into 2026 as well, where to me it's almost better if it goes one of the two ways. Just, you know, it's horrible or it's great.
Is it circumventing the salary cap if you pay Toyota to start Toyotathon in like September? Is there anything in against the rules and paying a league, you know, a fee to get the a company to start something a little sooner? That might be something Green Bay wants to look into. But yeah, this is going to be a very interesting remainder of the season for Green Bay, and how they, you know, every good team has a journey that had adversity through the middle of it at some point. And Green Bay is certainly going through the thick of it right now. I think the best stories are the ones where you do face a crap ton of adversity. 2010 for Green Bay is such a great example of that. They were 8-6 on the season. They had like 1,000 guys on injured reserve. Even in the final, in the Super Bowl, Charles Woodson goes out with a broken collarbone. Jarrett Bush is playing corner. Like it's a better story when you have to go through the thick of it. And I'm not saying that that's the story they're certainly going to tell. It seemed very far from the case at the moment, but the best stories are the ones where you have to overcome a lot of adversity. Green Bay is going through the thick of it right now. Hopefully they can come out the better for it, but this can go one of two ways really quick. And we're about to find out.
Well, you do, sitting back here, looking for reasons to be optimistic. It's very clear through this point in the season that Green Bay is a championship defense. This defense is good enough to go to the Super Bowl. Maybe not on their own, but they are not weak at all.
Yeah.
The special teams are what they are. That's just not going to change. But there is talent on this offense. And if you want reasons to be optimistic, we're sitting here talking doom and gloom. The Packers are one game away from leading the division, having lost it by 3 to one of the better teams in the conference. Now, obviously, the way they got there is not pleasant, But you've got a couple winnable games coming up here. You've absolutely got to win in New York. If they lay a Carolina Panthers, Cleveland Brown-esque stinker there, the stadium might be empty when the Minnesota Vikings come to town. Like, there could be a riot from the fans.
Except for us.
But if you win the games against the Giants and the Vikings like you should, we've said that a lot of the Packers, but you're 7-3-1. Hopefully the offense is looking better. You've got the talent on the team. The season is not over.
The funny thing is if everything goes chalk this week, you guys beat the Bears by Vegas favorites, the Packers beat the Giants, and the Eagles beat the Lions, and the Packers are in first place in the NFC North. So, there's a long time left. The other crazy thing is that the Packers are 10 points away from being undefeated. Yep. Like 10 points. They lost 3 games by 9 and they tied a game. So in their 4 non-losses, it's by a combined 9 points. So 10 more points in the right spots, and they are undefeated on the season. So just been that kind of year for Green Bay. And it just, like, in very Green Bay fashion too, like, of course the one game Green Bay puts up 40 points is the game that the defense no-shows and allows 40 points. And you can't win the game that the offense shows up in a major way and scores 40 points. And then like 3 games where you allow to combine 39 points, you're 0-3 in those 3 games. It's just remarkable of like, they just cannot play complimentary football and like show up for a game and be like, you know what? We're going to actually play offense, defense, and special teams for this game for 4 quarters. And imagine that. And, you know, the closest was obviously Detroit. And when they did that, they looked pretty damn good. We'll be right back. Hey, friends. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never, ever gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now it's time to start getting ready for week 11. Yes, week 11. Where does the time go? As Green Bay travels to New York and a chance for Green Bay to show they can actually beat a bad team. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, and I'm going with Jordan Love to have a starring performance to help get that big road win. Elsewhere in week 11, I'm going with big games from Ja'Marr Chase, Patrick Mahomes, and George Pickens. And here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least 2 player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the bigger payouts, go to the Power Play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. I'm not sure about you guys, but it's a season for hosting a lot of holiday dinners, get-togethers, and big events, and all of that planning, cooking, and shopping can take a huge extra toll on my stress levels when there's already so much going on. That's why I leave the stress behind and rely on Omaha Steaks to help me prepare amazing meals for all of my family and friends this holiday season. And not to spoil some gifts for family members who may be listening, but I've definitely been picking up some Omaha Steaks as gifts, which makes holiday shopping super simple as well. The best part is that you can benefit with their Sizzle All The Way sale, which you can get 50% off. Yes, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com. Plus, listeners get an extra $35 off with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. I'm actually hosting a birthday get-together this week, and the freezer is stocked with amazing steaks and burgers from Omaha, which is making things super simple to prepare and plan for. And if you haven't tried the food yet, it's beyond incredible. I can't recommend it enough. I especially want to shout out their grass-fed, grain-finished beef that has more marbling for exceptional flavor. Now, Omaha Steaks is a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So don't miss out on this deal and save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com with code PACKADAY.
Oh, when they're on, their peak is as high as any peak in the league. And that's the we had so many Packer fans in the comments last night who were just done. And I didn't blame them. When you have games like that, it's easy to just give up. And football is, we talk about all the time how reactionary week to week it is. I mean, I feel like I say that. I think I say that on every single one of our shows. But Marcus Freeman, the Notre Dame coach, who, you know, we almost bring up Notre Dame every show too, it seems, he was talking the other day because, you know, we started off 0-2. And he had a great quote when he was saying, you know, we stay in the moment and we stay in the struggle. And the last 2 years, Notre Dame has definitely started off with some rocky roads. And I think that's sort of what Green Bay's got. Like right now, like, you know, kind of embrace the struggle. And it's a young team, but they're really not that young anymore. I mean, they're young compared to the rest of the league, but, you know, these guys have been around and they've been to playoff games. Like they're a more experienced group than, you know, just saying, hey, this is the youngest team in football again. Like they need to look in the mirror and really determine whether or not they're going to turn this thing around. And if they lose to the Giants, it's over. That, like, I'll come out and we'll do the show next week. We'll be like, all right, like, Andy, it's been great. Well, you know, we'll just talk about the Vikings the rest of the year and how horrible our lives are as Vikings fans. But this is the gut check time.
And of course, the Giants, you know, go and get a new coach right before the game, and I'm probably going to give some unscouted looks. And Green Bay struggled with the Giants in the Matt LaFleur era. Like, just, you know, they had the game where Cutlets, what was his name?
Tommy DeVito. Yeah.
Tommy DeVito beat him. Like, that was a remarkable game. Dexter Lawrence has been an absolute pain in their side. So yeah, Green Bay has actually struggled with the Giants in Matt LaFleur's tenure, and it doesn't make any damn sense. So nothing would surprise me in this game whatsoever. So
DeVito game was one of the most surprising games I think I've ever watched. Cause that was a joke. Like, you know, I'm here in Jersey, and like, that was truly a joke when he was playing. It was just tanking. Probably the clearest form of tanking I've ever seen in my life. And when they won that game against you guys, I was like, what is happening here? So
you mentioned Green Bay's peaks are as high as anyone. Their lows are lower than the Tommy DeVito Giants and the 2025 Cleveland Browns too. Like, that's just what this team's DNA is a little bit. If you just don't know what you're going to get week to week, and if you want to make a run at things, like, you can't make a 3-game run through the playoffs and through a Super Bowl if, like, in any given week you can lose to one of the worst teams in football, and that it easily could be on the table again this week.
Well, and then we kept saying on our show, you know, the Lions, when they have a bad week, they come back and they just beat the crap out of a bad team. Like, they do it. They've done it for years now. When they play a bad team, they leave no doubt. Sure.
And
that's, I mean, that to me is a mark of a champion. Like, that's a trait you need to have, is can you actually blow out the teams? Not, you know, not just squeak by, and squeaking by is fine as long as you win, but they go out there and they just embarrass these guys. They show how good they are. And honestly, I think that imposes fear in a lot of teams they play. And Green Bay, they're just a bizarre team of all, like, the real contenders. They just seem to have an on-off switch that they have no control of. And I guess we'll just have to see with LaFleur. Like, everyone's asking, should he be fired? Not now, obviously. But we'll see how the next, you know, half of the season goes.
The interesting thing for you guys is, like, if you're looking for a pathway, right? Your pathway is, if Green Bay is just not good, you know, all of a sudden there's a pathway, right? Because Chicago at home, Green Bay, Washington, Dallas, New York, Green Bay again. Like, all of a sudden, if Green Bay is not good, that six doesn't sound so hard. Now you have Detroit and Seattle. Those two, very difficult. That's probably two losses. But again, I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm just saying, if you're looking for optimism from a Vikings standpoint, if all of a sudden Green Bay is, you know, not good at the sport of football, certainly advantageous for you guys.
Well, no. We've got our own problems of coaching, which we'll get to when we hit the Vikings. But I don't think Vikings fans are a whole lot happier about what's going on in Minnesota than Packers fans are of what's going on in Green Bay. And I don't think we're feeling more optimistic either, are we, Paul?
Optimistic? No, I'm not feeling optimistic at all. But I've completely accepted that, like, you know, this season, if anything comes of this season, it's a cherry on top to me. Like, I'm fully on board the JJ needs to get better trained. So even when we lost to the Ravens, now, was JJ better in that game? No, but I've realigned my expectations to, in an attempt to prevent future heartbreak. With that said, I also think if we beat Chicago, we're right back in the race the next weekend at Green Bay. So I will surely wind up being hurt again. But as of right now, I'm comfortable. And yeah, you know what? It's all about development. And I'm trying to convince myself.
What fan bases do you think are legitimately happy right now? I'm going to say the Patriots,
the Rams,
the Colts, the Rams, the Seahawks. And I'm actually going to say, I think for the most part, the Bears as well, just based on, like, expectations, going into the season and how they've been on mostly a winning streak as of late. I know they had a loss a few weeks ago, but I'm going to say those are the five fan bases that are actually like legitimately satisfied. And I think the other 27 are some level of frustrated. I know maybe like Detroit would go on the happy side, but they were just pissed a week ago to no end because they lost to you guys. So I think there's five legitimate happy fan bases.
I think that's accurate. I'm looking through. I mean, Chargers are probably sort of happy, but I'm seven. They're a sneaky 7-3. That's like a very quiet 7-3 team.
Agreed.
Chargers fans are still thinking of the time they lost in New York a few weeks ago to the Giants, I think.
Yeah. I would bet you that Green Bay and Buffalo are two of the unhappiest fan bases at the moment.
You guys seemed more unhappy last night than maybe I've ever seen the Packers fan base, at least since the beginning of the Love era.
I think this is honestly the most frustrated, even like before this week, this season's been the most frustrated that I've seen the Pack. Like when they were I saw Fire LaFleur tweets after the first preseason game. Like legitimate, like Fire LaFleur after the preseason game. Like I got it in, you know, week one when, not week one, sorry, not week one after Detroit, but like, they were 2-0 following the Washington game. And one of the narratives was, should the Packers move on from Matt LaFleur so that they can sign Jeff Hafley as head coach? And they were 2-0 and had beat the Detroit and Washington, like two good, what seemed like good teams at the time. And they were still like, just not satisfied. No, it's like, no, Jeff Hafley should be the coach. It's been interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it would be fun to go in there in 2 weeks and really put the nail in the coffin on this. that would be crazy. Right.
Well, while we transition over to you guys, just a note while we were recording here, a player that you're, team and the Packers were interested in, Asante Samuel Jr. signs with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Really?
Interestingly enough, on the practice squad, so not even a active roster signing for the Pittsburgh Steelers, signs to their practice squad. So we both do not get what we want. Asante Samuel ends up with the Steelers of all teams.
Yeah, I'm worried about his injury a lot. I mean, I obviously I would have been
there,
all
there's
in.
A reason five teams that need a quarterback passed on the guy coming off spinal fusion surgery, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
That's really alarming to me and honestly a little scary when he steps on the field. But obviously, yeah, I was hoping we were going to make a move there. And you guys could absolutely have used the help as well. It was kind of funny. I felt like every hour I was getting an alert on my phone. I was like, a former Charger Pro Bowler is visiting blank team. And it's like, okay, Asante Samuel is touring legitimately the entire NFL.
Everyone, yeah.
And yeah, I guess Pittsburgh, we'll see. I'm assuming he'll get on the field at some point. They're bleeding fast. They're in a lot of trouble, Pittsburgh.
Big time.
Yeah. So, yeah, we can turn our attention. I mean, we stall as much as we can, but we can turn our attention to the Ravens-Vikings game where Baltimore wound up winning 27-19. Really, really frustrating. I don't know how much of the game you caught, Andy, yep. But the Vikings, 13 penalties, 102 yards in penalties. They had 8 false starts. I mean, just...
At home.
At home, continuously. All year, we've been shooting ourselves in the foot. And Justin Jefferson had a very non-Justin Jefferson performance, one that raised a lot of eyebrows.
That was my number one thing I wanted to ask, but continue. I want to get to that.
Yes. I was just going to say, you know, Kevin O'Connell did not have a great game. McCarthy starts the game off with a, you know, picture perfect pass to Jalen Naylor, who was fantastic. And we go right down the field, score a touchdown. It's 3-and-out Baltimore, touchdown Vikings. And I leaned back in the recliner I was in. I went, holy crap, we're back. And after that, it basically went downhill after that. Okay, Andy, your question.
All right, so obviously watching this game, I have not seen the All 22. I've not seen the discourse on Vikings Twitter or anything. So this is like legitimate questioning, not leaning in any direction. When I saw the two deep balls were the ones that I was very interested in from McCarthy, the two that were picked, obviously, both, if I remember correctly, shot plays to Justin Jefferson.
Yes.
And I was of the opinion that I thought Justin did his quarterback no favors in that situation, in either of those. I'm not sure either of them are the most, opportune time to maybe throw. But you're kind of giving Justin one-on-ones, and then you know, the one play, it looks like maybe his feet get caught up and there's a stumble and it is what it is. The other one, I thought maybe, again, Justin could have maybe done a little bit better. But again, didn't see the all 22 of it. Just in real time and as they showed the replays of it, I could kind of see what JJ was seeing slash thinking. And usually when you give Justin Jefferson a one-on-one, you're like, hey, I like my chances where at minimum this isn't going to be picked and maybe he's going to do something crazy. It just didn't feel like, I don't know. It was just an odd situation to me.
Ziggy, you want to take this first?
I mean, you can count on one hand probably the number of times when Justin Jefferson has had a flat-out bad game as a Minnesota Viking, where the body language has been bad, where the effort hasn't quite been there, where the production hasn't been there, where plays he usually makes work out and just don't. You're going to need one more finger after this one. This was one of his worst games as a Viking. And it's hard to know exactly what's going on inside the locker room. Where some of that just Justin Jefferson getting frustrated with the way the season is going? Is Justin Jefferson hurt and they're not talking about it? It's hard to know. But nothing worked right for this offense except Jalen Naylor. And that is not something you should be saying when Justin Jefferson is on your team. Yeah. And it's not just this game. I mean, this game is the worst game he's had this season, but he's having his worst season as a pro. His connection with JJ McCarthy just isn't there. And, you know, Justin Jefferson's standards are extremely high. His worst season as a pro is an above average season for almost any wide receiver in the NFL. But the Vikings need a leader right now. They need somebody on the field, on offense, who can say, I can take over this game and bail you guys out when things aren't going well. And when Sam Darnold was struggling, that was Justin Jefferson. With Kirk Cousins, that was Justin Jefferson. With our cavalcade of backups, that was always Justin Jefferson. And this game, it wasn't.
Yeah, I think Justin Jefferson has earned the right that we don't need, that we shouldn't speculate he's pissed off with the team. Like he's just been a great leader, a great teammate his entire time, a great guy in the community in Minnesota his entire time there. It's understandable why he would be frustrated, but I'm not going to go so far as to be like, oh, he wants out. And obviously I wouldn't want to fan those fires anyway if it were true.
He should absolutely want out.
Yeah,
Andy. Absolutely want out of Minnesota. That's a given. That's a clear and obvious given.
But he, you know, the concerning thing was seeing him look so frustrated after some overthrows and some misfires from McCarthy where, you know, and, you know, he had the drop in the end zone, too. And I don't think people are getting on him for that. He's getting hit while reaching his arms out. Yep, you know, that's a tough catch. And but Ziggy, you're right, too. Justin Jefferson makes that catch. Other people in the league don't. That's his. He has superpowers. He's the guy that is always upbeat and can turn things around in a second because he's the best receiver in the world. And the more upsetting thing, I wasn't mad that he didn't make that play. I was more upset with his reaction and response to everything because he has to be the one to have heart every week in and week out. Maybe he just had a bad day, but we can't really afford that from him. As far as the two interceptions, because I feel like we completely disregarded your question, Andy, the two deep balls, the first one was another one where I didn't think he really had a chance at it. I'm not sure he actually saw the ball the entire time. It's thrown into, you know, he's sort of in double coverage there. I just thought that was a, you know, JJ tucked it up. It is what it is. And Starks was, you know, he touched Starks. That's why he's not running after him on that play.
Yep, that which makes sense. Yep.
I had no issues with that. The following play, I think, was much more interesting because he goes down. He's frustrated all day with how the refs were officiating him. He made that very clear on a couple plays later. And when he goes down and Humphrey intercepts it, you know, Marlon Humphrey, if you haven't seen it, you should go watch because Humphrey just kind of starts walking with the football.
He's like jogging. Yeah, they get best. Yeah.
Justin's just, you know, walking. Like he's also walking toward Humphrey. And it seemed so bizarre that I was just waiting for the flag to be thrown because you could see Jefferson tripped. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wait, he's just not trying on this play. Like, he's just not trying to tackle him. And that was one where it was like, yeah, the effort wasn't there. And if you're frustrated, you still got to go make that tackle. I honestly wasn't too upset that he didn't do it because I don't want Jefferson to get hurt on one of those plays. But really, the play call is the more fascinating piece of that entire play where it's third and one and the Vikings are driving down 1 point to open the quarter on the 50-yard line, moving the ball well on this drive too. They're running well and O'Connell decides to take the shot. And you should just see the Viking fans everywhere are posting, run the ball more, KOC. You know, they ran 13 times for 72 yards, had a lot of success on the ground. They just didn't stick to it. And O'Connell's response was, third and one, I know I'm going for it. I'm fourth and one. We have cover zero with the best receiver in the world on the outside. I don't regret that shot. And I would have called a run, but I don't blame him either. You take that shot.
Do we need a coach trade? Does this fix everything?
I would not trade coaches.
Does this fix everything? Matt LaFleur just wants to run the football. You guys get to run the football all the time. KOC wants to take the shot plays down the field. Jordan Love's ready. Jordan Love's ready to take all the shot plays down the field. And maybe just a trade of coaches. Everything's fixed for both franchises. See you later, Detroit and Chicago. Minnesota and Green Bay are heading right to the top.
I mean, if you combine our teams, well, watch out.
I mean, I'll say this. I think there's like some funny coincidence there. Both of these coaches, I think fan bases feel like have the same problem. Their play calling is just not responding to the situation their team's actually in. Right? We've talked about it with Green Bay, but with Minnesota, JJ McCarthy, you can see this from the advanced stats. You can see this from watching how his leg moves when he's throwing. The more times he throws in the game, the worse the mechanics get and the worse the throws get. Like, his EPA is basically a straight line up for the first drive or two and then a straight line down for the rest of the game, almost every single game. His mechanics start out pretty good and then degrade once you get to past 20 or 25. And this shouldn't be a surprise given how JJ McCarthy played in college. But in a game where our run game is working okay, and it's not like we're down 21-0 in the second quarter like the San Francisco 49ers, JJ McCarthy gets 42 passes dialed up. And a lot of these are deep passes for a quarterback who already struggles with holding the ball and dealing with pressure. The play calling in Minnesota, too, is just not responding to the game situations we're actually in and what JJ McCarthy can actually do. So, I mean, the false starts, I think, are a part of that, too. Clearly something, when you have 8 false starts, including 5 or 6 of them on veteran players, there's probably something going on with your quarterback in the game. All of that is stuff I expect to get addressed, but it seems like it's the same story in Minnesota and Green Bay. We've got offensive-minded head coaches who we know can coordinate good offenses, but the partnership of their quarterback just isn't working.
Well, Ziggy, to kind of further where that there might be some sort of a disconnect with McCarthy and O'Connell early on, short yardage, right? We are horrendous. I sent you this earlier today. The Vikings are terrible in short yardage, and they have been for a while, really all of O'Connell's tenure there. But this season, McCarthy, Andy, you'll like this stat, 22 third or fourth in short situations, so 3 yards or less. They've had 1 fumbled snap. They've had 1 defensive offsides. 6 run calls. They converted 5 of those. And 14 passing calls. Guess how many first downs on the passing calls?
I'll say, I don't know which direction you're heading me. I would have said probably like half. I'll say like 3.
0. Oh, 0 first downs on third and fourth or 3 and less. They've been sacked 4 times and picked off twice, or McCarthy has been. And, you know, it's brutal. You watch teams, you said, Ziggy, like the Eagles, who it's just an automatic. They get into those short yard situations. That's how they win so many of these close games, is because they're able to convert those plays at the end. And, you know, the Vikings just haven't been able to do that. And I think I said at the top that coming out half, we are down 9-10. We're actually winning 10-9 with the ball when we took the shot to Jefferson that was picked off by Humphrey. And the Vikings, I mean, it's kind of similar to the Packers in a way. You know, we throw that interception. And I've said this for years, that our ability to collapse in all 3 phases of the game simultaneously is, you know, pretty much unmatched across sports, where they throw the interception right down the field for a field goal for Baltimore. Defense does a nice job holding its ground. Then we fumble the kickoff. Baltimore scores. We're down 19-10 in the blink of an eye. And all of a sudden, you know, O'Connell starts throwing the ball more. We abandon the run game, and that's all she wrote. So I do think Kevin needs to be a lot better, and he can't have, you know, a brilliant game in Detroit and follow it up with just a complete clunker against the Ravens when that game is there for the taking. So very much disappointment on our end as well, Andy.
Yes. I mean, I think the you know, obviously from a Vikings standpoint, it hasn't gone exactly according to plan. The Jefferson thing is super interesting. The McCarthy thing is really interesting to me. Here was my question number 2 for you guys this week. With McCarthy, how, with Josh McCown, known quarterback guru, Kevin O'Connell, known quarterback whisperer. And I remember, I loved McCarthy coming out. Why is it looking like he is trying to throw a dodgeball a million miles per hour through anyone when he's throwing the football and has not found any touch whatsoever on some of these plays? It is remarkable to me where it's like he just has the one speed fastball, and I'm very stunned that that hasn't developed in some real way, shape, or form where he hasn't found a little bit more touch on some of those passes.
I think Ziggy said in the beginning or a little earlier that early in games, you know, against Detroit, he had he dropped it right in the bucket to Addison, and Addison wasn't able to bring it in the corner of the end zone. This game had a perfect pass to Jalen Naylor down the sideline on the opening touchdown drive.
That one was beautiful.
And yeah, like he has a couple throws where you go like, that's it. Like that is it right there. Exactly what we want. And yeah, then just as the game goes on, he starts to just turn into like a backyard quarterback.
Nine comes out
and he's nine just firing away. I don't know. I don't know the answer. And listening to O'Connell talk, it does sound like he's just, you know, training a puppy. Basically he's like, we got to work on things. We're looking at footwork. We're looking at climbing the pocket, you know, when to dump it off. And everything he's saying makes you realize more and more that this is going to be a project, like a bigger project maybe than some people thought. I had my questions about JJ beforehand, but a lot of people were hoping he could pick up where Darnold left off. No, that's not the situation here, but it's also game four. So I'm not making any sweeping declarations on JJ until at least the end of the season, honestly. But yeah, it would be nice to see a couple more touch passes and encouraging plays in that regard.
Where are we at with the Jonathan Greenard injury? Because that's obviously huge too for you guys.
He might miss next week, but he'll be okay. Because that, yeah, when he went down,
he'll be fine just in time for Green Bay.
Yeah. You'll be
able
to
see him. That's fantastic. That's perfect. Chef kiss.
He should be good. I was really excited though, Ziggy, with Jalen Naylor. We mentioned him for a second, was awesome. And if he could, I've always thought he's Speedy Naylor's a good player. He could develop a little bit more too. Just have another weapon to utilize with Hockenson having a down year. And O'Connell mentioned as well that they need to get him the ball more. Maybe that could help get Justin Jefferson going again. But yeah, there were things to be encouraged by, but overall it was a pretty disappointing game.
We'll be right back. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
I am, because you guys are still without Josh Oliver, right? Or is he back now?
We've been without him. I think he's ramping up, but I don't know if
everyone's everyone's always ramping. Nobody's ever ramped. Everyone's always ramping. No, obviously you guys keep close tabs on the league and a lot of what these offenses are doing with their heavy personnel packages and two tight end sets, three tight end sets, etc. I know I've talked about Josh Oliver in the past, and I still think he has the ability to bring some of that to the table where you can have him on the field as a blocker and also be still a receiving threat. I know he's not, when you have Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Jalen Naylor, you know, Aaron Jones, Jordan Mason, TJ Hockenson, et cetera, he's not 1A on that list, but I still think that's an important piece too, that is definitely missing, especially the way teams are playing with more heavy personnel right now.
He's remarkable at getting tackled a yard short at where he needs to go, Josh Oliver.
That's also fair.
He is just sensational at getting, you know, getting hit right in the legs and falling a yard short of the goal line or the first down. But he's an excellent blocker that he's helped. I mean, he's absolutely helps the offense go. So the NFC North odds, guys, we kind of keep our tabs on those. The Lions -120 now, the Packers +170, Chicago +700, despite being tied for first. And the Vikings, you know, great value here at +2200 at the bottom of the pack. Where's the best value?
+4000 right now. That is how irrelevant they are. Sportsbooks are willing to deviate by that much because they don't care.
Where do you think? Where's the value for you, Ziggy, at that?
I said it a few weeks ago. I felt like the Packers were value at minus odds. I feel like the Packers are value at plus odds. I'm going to stick with it. When things look like they're going absolutely terrible for a team with a lot of talent, this is an ideological commitment I have to. Talent beats bad coaching. At a certain point, the talent on Green Bay has got to shine through. And I just refuse to believe in my heart of hearts that the Green Bay offense can keep being this bad for this long. Maybe it will, right? There's absolutely a possibility that this Green Bay has already peaked for the season and it's a long, painful, slow downhill from here. I just don't believe that's going to happen. There's too much talent on this offense and on this defense. I still think they've got as much talent as the Lions. They still have plenty of division games left. It's not like they're out of it. I'm going to stick with Green Bay at plus odds and just hope that things turn around because they have to. Surely.
What did I get my Bears bet in at? Was it +1200 last week?
I think it was up there. I can check on it. But yeah, no, you got that in at a nice spot.
I'm holding on to my +1200 Bears. I'm not cashing it in early. I'm holding it on my +1200 that I got from a week ago. But like legitimately, as we're sitting here right now, what'd you say the Lions are minus what?
The Bears last week were +850. You might have even gotten them the week before that, though.
Maybe it was the week before
that.
I
think you might have. Right now, the Bears are +700.
And what are the Lions at?
Lions -120, Packers +170.
-120, like I might actually be making some investments here. -120 on so
you're done.
The Lions.
You're done.
Feels fantastic. That feels like stealing at the moment. I just think they're the best team. Where does this end up if Green Bay does the unthinkable and goes to New York and loses this week?
I thought you were going to say wins.
It's not unthinkable at all. You're right. It's not unthinkable at all. So if Green Bay goes to New York and loses and Philly beats Detroit and Chicago beats Minnesota, where do you think Chicago's odds are at the end of next week? +450?
Lower than that. +550, I think.
+550?
Yeah. I think Vegas is very confident in Detroit over Chicago, regardless of what happens this week. Now, what happens if the Vikings beat the Bears in that same situation?
That's a really interesting one, too.
That actually is like, you know, jokes aside, that does make it like pretty entertaining. Then the Viking Packer game takes on pretty massive.
You guys might get to like +1800.
Yeah. we might crawl our way back up into it. If the Vikings somehow won the division this year, it would be the most that would be more shocking than the Minneapolis Miracle.
I will wear a Vikings jersey and skull for you guys for a solid 5 minutes if the Vikings win the division this year. So
I actually have a very short, kind of very embarrassing thing to tell you guys now that I mentioned the Minneapolis Miracle. I didn't mean to do it. I was watching something. It came up today. I was on YouTube and I saw the play. And every time I see that, I click it. And I'm watching it over, and you know, I watched the Favre versus 49ers throw as well. And I read a comment that was just like, this is the magic of football. And I was just like reflecting on how awesome that play was, like that night in my house. And I actually had a tear run down my face. And I was just like, okay. I actually put down my phone. It was a great memory. I put down my phone and I was by myself and I went, I need to get myself together. I just walked upstairs, looked at my sister, was like, I think I just cried over the Minneapolis miracle. Like, yeah, we're in a bad spot, man.
I feel the same way on the Tracy Porter play. I totally get it. I totally understand it.
I do cry on that play as well. I actually cry.
Different eye for each tier, yeah.
So week 11, we'll look ahead here now. The Bears go to Minnesota, where the Vikings are shockingly 2-0 in the division. And the Chicago, they're 1-2 now, right? Or are they 0-2?
The Bears are currently
0-2, right? They lost to the Lions and Vikings.
0-2 in the division. 0-2, yep.
So the Bears are, and what's the line on that? You said we're 2.5. Complete lack of preparation on the FanDuel stuff.
The Bears this week are currently set at the Vikings -3.5
from Minnesota. You don't feel good betting the Vikings in any situation. All the Vikings lines coming out. Like last week, I think Baltimore was -3.5. It's like, might be a good bet. So looking at this one, guys, I know that I always feel that this is a cop-out statistic to point to when you mention the turnover battle in the game. But Chicago on the year is +14 in turnover differential. The second closest team in football are the Jaguars and Tampa Bay at +8. So they're doubled up on the entire league in turnover differential, which they've been doing a great job of all season. And J.J. McCarthy in 4 games has thrown 6 interceptions. When the Vikings win the turnover battle or are even tied under O'Connell, they're 33-4, which I kind of blew my mind, actually. So that is what I'm keyed in on. Is McCarthy going to have a massive mistake? He did the first time they played, and we were fortunate enough to have that magical fourth quarter. I'm not feeling great about it. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not very encouraged by this one. Should I be expecting a loss? Is what I'm asking you guys.
Ziggy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Ziggy. Dude, what the hell, man? You're out here like gassing up the Packers. You expect a loss? Like this is.
Last week I was right, Paul. Look, the Minnesota Vikings.
Fair enough.
J.J. McCarthy, he can have good games. Maybe this could be a good game. The Bears' defense is weak. I've seen a lot of Vikings fans coming in saying if J.J. McCarthy doesn't throw for 300 plus against this injured secondary, I'm out. I'll tell you what, if that's you, you can get out right now. J.J. McCarthy might have a good game. We might be able to be competitive with the Bears. I think this is true. But the Bears are trending up and the Vikings are trending down. And even though I'm not convinced Chicago is actually a good team and their wins have been against bad teams by small margins, the Minnesota Vikings are a bad team. So that trend continues for Chicago. They have a good win against Minnesota by a small margin and keep the magic alive for another week.
I'm really torn on this one. I've literally gone back and forth about 3 times just while you and Ziggy have kind of talked about this. I'm going to say Minnesota only because I think Justin Jefferson has a massive bounce back game, has one of his best games of the season, and the Bears don't win the turnover battle. It's always tough playing in Minnesota. Weird things happen. You guys do a great job with crowd noise. I mean that sincerely, not like piping in noise. I mean like your crowd's fantastic and it's loud as hell in there. So yeah, I'm gonna very, very scarily go Vikings over Bears.
I will too, very hesitantly. I felt, to be honest, last week when I picked us over Baltimore, that might have been a little bit more optimistic than I should have been. I'm going to pick us to win a close one again, but it's going to start. Chicago's averaged 185 yards on the ground the last 5 games, and it's going to be important. You know, we got torn up in the second half on the ground by Baltimore. They just started running all over the place. And that was kind of surprising after shutting down Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit. After you see what they do against the Commanders. I don't know how. I really don't know how we had that performance against the Lions. So we got to get back to that and try and get them in, you know, second and long, third and long situations, and get Caleb to make a mistake. The other thing is, it's hard to bring Caleb Williams down. he is a master at escaping. But you just got to try.
Negative plays have almost disappeared from this Bears offense, which is such a change from last year.
Yeah, so you just got to find a way to. You can't let him catch rhythm because if he gets going, then they get Swift and Manungai, and I think we'll be okay. But it starts with JJ can't throw interceptions and stopping the rushing attack. So I'm gonna pick us as well, not confidently. Packers at Giants. Giants just fire Brian Daboll. you know, the Packers can't beat good teams. Something has to give here. Like, what are you picking, Ziggy?
Packers win, Giants cover. It's going to be ugly. I think, even though I think Green Bay's offense is going to get it together, I'm not sure this will be the week. Even though the Giants are not a good team, that defensive line scares me. It is sleepily one of the best defensive lines in the NFL, just in terms of the talent that's stacked along it. And Green Bay struggled with that against Philly. But the Giants offense, whether if Jackson Dart plays, it will be a little better. If it's Russell Wilson, it will be worse. But regardless, I don't think it's going to be good enough to get the touchdown the Eagles needed to beat the Packers. I think the Packers win, but 7.5 feels like a lot.
Bowling shoe ugly. Packers win 13-12.
That'll. I mean, you guys will be furious if that's the case. Like, I can even see it now.
Not as furious as if they lose.
No, yes,
that's very true.
If Russell Wilson plays, is that confirmed yet? Whether or not Dart's playing, or is that still up?
No, it's too early in concussion protocol. We have no idea.
There has been some buzz about Winston too.
Oh, I'd rather play Russ than Winston.
I'd rather play against Russell Wilson too.
Not that totally I'm scared agree. Of Winston. I think Russ, if you guys lose to the Russell Wilson led Giants with how bad they were, then it's like, all right, shut down the season time. I think you guys will win. And I actually think you're going to cover too. I expect this to be, how many times have we heard this? I expect this to be the bounce back performance where you guys, a little concern about the D-line. Yep. With the way the offensive line has looked in Green Bay, that has to be on the radar. But I'm expecting you guys to shut them down. I can't imagine, especially if Dart's out. If Dart's in, it gets a little shakier. But no, I think you'll win. I think you'll cover. But what do I know at this point? The last one, Lions at Eagles, Sunday Night Football, massive game, potentially an NFC Championship game preview. It's the one that we were stripped of last year with all the Lions injuries. The Eagles are 2.5-point favorites.
No, the Detroit's going to win this game. The Eagles fundamentally are a cowardly team. You can see it from how they called the plays last night. They do not like aggressive passing. You get maybe one or two aggressive plays from them a game. I still, that third run on 3rd and 12 in the red zone just lives in my mind for what you should never do in a football game. The Detroit Lions are the exact opposite. They're maybe the most aggressive team in the NFL, but they're good enough that when they're aggressive, it usually works out. I think Detroit has heart. Philadelphia's offense is broken. I'm taking Detroit to win this one by at least a score.
Detroit wins. I think I'm with Ziggy on this one. I was not super impressed with Philly overall. Their defense played well, but I honestly think that was a lot more with Green Bay's offense completely crapping the bed. So I'm gonna say Detroit in this one.
Do you guys think Nick Sirianni trusts Jalen Hurts throw? Like, because I was thinking no the whole game, and then all of a sudden, he launches it to Brown. I was like, wait a second, this doesn't seem consistent.
I think he trusts Jalen Hurts to make one or two big plays a game, but he does not trust Jalen Hurts to operate a passing offense for an entire game.
It almost felt like on Monday Night Football that even that 3rd and 12 run, it almost felt like Philly knew, like, if we get to like 9 points, we're good. Like, we're going to be fine in this game.
It just felt like it, right? The more the game went on, it was like, they're gonna do what they normally do here. And I was surprised you guys got the stop, actually. I thought they were just going to run the clock out. Kind of like they did in Brazil, right? Remember they had that long drive and ended the game. I'm also going to go Detroit in this, which makes me think, if we're all on board with Detroit, I love the way they play football. I think it's awesome. And Campbell taking over play calling seemed to work quite well against Washington. If they do it against Philly, now maybe becomes a bigger story of how impactful it is. But I'm going to go with Lions as well. And yeah, they would be my pick to win the division at this point in time too. But hey, Andy, I mean, you guys play well in Detroit. So that Thanksgiving game, I know you guys are down now, but I would not be surprised if you go on a little win streak here.
Listen, I don't think this is the final form of this Packers team. I think they will have a bounce back at some point. What that amounts to, we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think the Packers story is done quite yet. Maybe that story gets a whole hell of a lot worse. That's also a possibility here. But I think there could be another twist or turn to this thing still. And a part of me would be pretty surprised if Green Bay just bowed out of this thing and it was just like, yep, they're done. They totally suck. I think they're going to make some noise still, but maybe that's wishful thinking.
Feel the same way about the Vikings, Andy.
No, that's wishful thinking.
That is wishful thinking. All right. We'll wrap it up there. Any final thoughts for you guys, or you just want to say, like, you know, bad week 10, let's get out of here.
I can't even get myself excited for a, like, hyped up exit here. This is a miserable week for both of these teams.
Can we even say the Bears still suck?
We're still saying it.
They're higher up for first in the division. No, you can't say the Bears still suck when you are behind them through 10 weeks. I don't want to hear it.
Maybe Andy could give a go Irish. Go Irish. All right. We could end with the God, there really is nothing.
We'll end with burn the tape. Simon has always burned the tape.